Y'all, this is the great Grandmaster Melly Mel.
And this is Scorpio, Show No Shame.
And I'm Dynamite, the hypest man in the business.
And if you got ears, listen to 90.3 CKUT.
Good morning, Montreal. You are tuned to the Wednesday Morning After on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. We have a tight show for you today with two music interviews and one from the Arts and Culture spot. The first interview is with Chard the Blues Man, who has just released Blue Harp, an excellent album of incredible blues harmonica. The titles of the songs really fit the music. The second interview is with Ellie William about her new book, The Liar's Dictionary. Ellie will read us some passages from the book later in the show. The final interview is with Leanne Pearson, Canadian country up-and-comer. She belongs with the best of the best. We'll be hearing more from her in the future. 8 a.m. brings Democracy Now!, 8:15 brings Weather, and this week Naomi joins us with the brand new Wednesday Morning After segment on poetry. After Naomi's spot, we'll wrap up the show. Let's start the day off with some music.
Thank you. true.
Chard, what we love to call Richard J. Chenier, has been a musician since 1965. He has followed his career in Canada, playing in festivals and even with the Powder Blues. He's releasing new music on his latest album. Let's find out what it's all about. Today we have with us Chard. Hi, Chard, and welcome to the show.
Well, good morning. Thank you for inviting me.
Please tell us how your career has gone as a musician and songwriter.
I started, first of all, as an instrumentalist and singing, but I didn't write songs until later. I started playing blues harmonica when I discovered a small album by Sonny Terry of just harmonica solos. So I was captivated by that, and I basically learned teaching myself, creating what he was doing. And eventually I learned from other musicians and other sources like Memphis Slim and Sonny Boy Williamson and a variety of other inspirations. The songwriting developed later, inspired very much by Robert Johnson's poetic approach to the lyrics. I grew up in Winnipeg, but I moved to Montreal, where I played the blues primarily until I met Beverly Glenn Copeland, and I became the harmonicist. So we became a team, and we performed in Montreal, in New York, in Toronto. We did radio, TV, coffee houses, clubs. We auditioned in Greenwich Village in New York for the Johnny Carson show. We had a career until the end of the 60s when I decided to move and go solo in Vancouver, where I would do studio work, sit in with other bands like the Powder Blues. And in the 80s, I returned to Montreal, where I perform in blues festivals, do studio work, and appear in local places like Cafe Mariposa and the Wheel Club. I'm featured often with Poza Blue or Hard Knocks. I've recorded 4 blues harmonica albums in Montreal. So the songwriting developed in more the 70s, and then it's been developing more recently. I wasn't that confident about my songwriting until lately.
How did you learn to become a musician?
As a teenager, I had discovered a recording of Sonny Terry, so I really got connected to the blues through that. But I really wanted to experiment with different music genres, so I would play folk, country, Chicago blues, Latin, Cuban, and jazz material, because I wanted it to blossom into my own personal distinctive harmonica sound. It helped a lot to see Joni Mitchell and Nina Simone and Sonny and Brownie and other people like that live. That really helped to form how I became a musician, making every note count, putting a lot of feeling and passion into what I do. And that was really the critical thing, is having seen, let's say, Muddy Waters in a small club, see him pour his heart out to an almost empty place and just do some soul-stirring, meaningful music no matter what the situation. That was a lifelong impact on how I approach my performances.
What is your latest album called, and what inspired this new work?
Blue Harp is my COVID experience, because during lockdown, I couldn't play with other musicians. I had to rely on my own resources. I wanted to remain creative, and it was difficult by myself, but I managed to create this album partly because it was very helpful to explore new things. I had no choice. I had to push boundaries. So it was created on my iPad based on my YouTubes and open mic Zooms. It's a combination of classic blues, folk, jazzy, innovative blues. So it's called Blue Harp because I really was a blue harp during the COVID experience.
May we hear some of your music?
Yeah, the first is Turquoise Blues. It's a mellow instrumental. It sort of exemplifies my search for a new approach to how to play the blues harmonica. I hope that you enjoy it. It's more atmospheric and not so much a dead-on 12-bar blues approach.
This is Turquoise Blues on the Wednesday Morning After. Thank you. What do you do when you're not playing music?
I paint an exhibit since 1971, received a Canada Council grant and published my drawings, produced documentaries about my art. I created a website so that people can go view my artwork and view my YouTubes called chartart.com. That's what I do most of the time. I paint, I draw, I take a break and make music. Usually before COVID, I would paint all by myself all day long, and then I would go and relax and make music with friends in the evening. Unfortunately, that's been sort of reversed for the past 13 months.
How does this influence you as a musician and songwriter?
Well, painting is very solitary, and making music is very communal. So it's a great sort of balance in terms of giving me some respite from always living in my imagination by myself and communing with other people through music, which is wonderful. There's a synergy also between painting and music. When I'm making music, I'm seeing colors, forms, I'm seeing people's faces and their expressions, their body language, which is material for the painting. And when I'm painting, I always, 99% of the time, am working with different types of music. So let's say I'm playing a Latin or a Cuban style of background music, the rhythms influence what I'm doing with the brush. I'm a big fan of Cuba, and I often, when I go down to Cuba, I play with musicians there. So the music I play, whether it's a slow blues or a very kinetic, high-powered Chicago blues album, it affects how I paint. So they feed each other and they refresh each other. It's a great combination.
May we listen to some more of your music?
Sure, pleasure. This is a tune that exemplifies a bit of the mix of all the different influences that I've been trying to mingle. And it's an amalgam of different musical genres all in one song. I hope you like it. Justice, No Justice in the World.
This is No Justice in the World on CKUT. Thank you.
is brown. The planet's on fire, and everybody's wild. I just want a piece of mine, and it just be a little while.
If our listeners want some free listening time or to buy your music, where should they go?
They just have to Google Bandcamp and search for Charred Blue Harp. Or they can go to my website, charredart.com. And not only can they get that album, but they can also view my YouTubes and see the other material that's there for them. They can see my art and my music.
Well, thank you for your interview today.
Well, it was a real pleasure, and I really appreciate having a chance to speak about this album, because I wanted to reach out and let people know that we're the musicians, however limited we are in a chance to share our work, this is a golden opportunity to let you know we're still there, we're still making music.
You have been listening to Chard speaking about his music. I am your host, Sheila Ferrando.
Early in the morning, before the sun rose, when the first bird sang, even while everyone was still asleep.
Morning. On that morning.
When the sun comes out.
This morning, baby.
Cock-a-doodle-doo. I hear the rooster crowing.
Now you must wake up.
Now every morning when I wake up,
I woke up this morning with
the kiss of the morning.
Got up 7:30 every morning. Had the same breakfast.
Réveillez-moi à 8 heures demain matin.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning. Riding a bike made of bacon and eggs.
In the morning.
In the morning.
In the morning.
Why should the sun replace the moon?
Has this ever happened to any of you, or will it happen to any of you, on the morning after the night before?
You are listening to The Morning After on CKUT 90.3 on the FM dial.
Imagine yourself living with a dictionary. You can choose any words you want, especially those no one has heard of before, to brighten your day and define the world more completely. That is Ellie Williams' Liar's Dictionary, out now from Random House Books. With us today, we have Ellie William, author of The Liar's Dictionary. Hi, Ellie, and welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
First, please introduce yourself and tell us how you came to be involved with The Liar's Dictionary.
Sure. Well, I'm a fiction writer. I currently lecture at a university based in London in the UK in creative writing. And previously, I've written short fiction that's been published, but this is my first novel. And it comes at the end of research that I did for a PhD. And all of that was based around the idea of fictional entries in dictionaries and encyclopedias. And as part of that research, I was imagining how fiction can deal with deceit and mistrustworthiness when it comes to defining words. And through looking at real examples of made up words in dictionaries, words that have been made up by a lexicographer rather than necessarily part of a current language, whether slang or formal language, and seeing how far real histories of real lexicographers, real dictionary makers, might match up with a fictional world where fictional words at play. And that's really the background for the novel, and it alternating between the 19th century London and a fictional dictionary house and a contemporary London with an intern who's working at that same dictionary.
Why is it called The Liar's Dictionary?
I was interested in the way in which, if we define a word that we have made up, we're telling a kind of truth. We're giving a word and a sense of a meaning to something that is suddenly real and extant. But we're also telling a lie. We're also saying that something is true and is part of a communication, when really it's just from our imagination. And it may be necessarily from our imagination. But I wanted to examine the way in which that is a kind of mistruth, or there's something that we should be suspicious of. There's something surreptitious and mischievous in that communication. And I wanted to see, with these characters in the novel, are they liars, or are they artists, or are they creatives, or are they a mixture of all three?
What brought you to this point in your career? How did you become an author?
I'm very much one of the many writers that say, oh, I've always written, and I've always doodled at the same time. And the stories that I came up with, or the kind of sketches or skits, they always felt a bit more like doodling than they did sitting down to create a pictorial landscape. It felt more phrases that came together rather than narratives necessarily. But I did a master's in creative writing, just really to understand where plot or narrative might come into that. If I enjoy language and I enjoy doodling or noodling with language, where does character emerge from that? Does it have to? Where does plot go? And what do I mean by plot and story? And why do they feel difficult or elusive somehow? And through that master's, I developed a collection of short fiction, of prose, where it seemed more to be about how I enjoyed writing about moments and making moments momentous, rather than, again, necessarily feeling like I'd nailed plot and had got to grips with it. And the novel really was the longest amount of time that I'd given myself to explore what was possible through having an architecture, really a shape to a narrative that was as important as the way in which things were being expressed in the fiction. So it was very much an experiment of form for me. And I'm very glad that I came across this idea of the fictional words in dictionaries, which I could apply that experiment.
What happens if you lie about a word in the Liar's Dictionary, according to its spelling or meaning, or in fact, its reality as a word itself?
Well, part of the fun of writing about this liar lexicographer was make false words. So, for example, one that comes to mind, the word casiculation in the novel is created by the lexicographer to describe that sensation of walking through spider's silk. I'm sure you've had this experience as well, that maybe you're up either early in the morning or very late at night, and the spiders have already been out and about and have started spinning their webs across doorways, across thresholds, and you've just blundered through them. And that very strange, small, inscrutable pressure of spider silk just felt across either your arm or on your face. I felt like there should be a word for that particular feeling, that specific feeling, and came up with this word casiculation, drawing on various etymologies related to spider's silk. Of course, it's a lie. That word doesn't exist. While there might be a need for it and a delight in there being a need for it, it would be a lie to say that that's what that word means. But now that I've shared it with you, and now that I've shared it in the novel, even though it is a work of fiction, maybe it'll have some currency. So the lie will take on a life of its own, and maybe will become more meaningful and a kind of truth in its own way.
Could you read us a piece of the Liar's Dictionary?
Sure. So this part comes from the 19th century section of the novel. The novel alternates between the contemporary world and the 19th century. And in this section, the main character, who is a rather diffident, unsure lexicographer, who has taken on this task for himself for inserting fake words into the dictionary, he is having quite a depressing and boring day at work near St. James's Park in London, and he's just made his way to the park to take a break from his work, and he is starting to fall asleep because he had a late night the night before. And in this section, just as a form of context, I wanted to concentrate on how we might, through description, get across this idea of the mind wandering, of words slowly losing their meaningfulness or their meaning as things a bit more cloudy and more clotted as we fall asleep. As that happens, the sentences get longer, the phrasing gets more circuitous, and the grammar slightly unfurls. So if you detect that in the sentences, I'll claim now that that's very much intended to mirror the idea of falling asleep. So with Wordsworth, "But falling asleep now would muddy the rest of the day and spoil any chance of rest this evening. Finish the cake," he told himself. "Take one more turn around the park to get the blood going and face the day renewed." He dug his glasses into the bridge of his nose and winched his face to the sky, willing himself into wakefulness. Two birds veered overhead, chatting and braiding the air. It might have been his imagination, but a dandelion seed seemed to drift through his line of sight and join them. He wondered whether anyone would miss him if he just stayed put amongst the weeds, kicking the clocks of dandelions until facelessness and spending the afternoon not amongst paper and letters and words, but instead here, head to and in and of the clouds, counting birds until the numbers ran out. There were funny, oily little wild birds in the park, some of which he recognised. Surely too early for starlings, starlings with feathers star-spangled and glittersome. One brave bird hopped about his feet for cake crumbs, while still more were flitting above his head with the dandelion seeds, blown wishes finding a snooze in the air. The best benchside exoticisms January could offer were all on show, the starling, the dandelion, the blown seeds, and the bird skeining against the grey clouds, hazing it and mazing it, a featherlight kaleidoscope, noon damp and knowing the sky was never truly grey, just filled with a thousand years of birds' paths and wishful seeds. A bird seed sky is something meddled and ripe and wish hot, the breeze bird breath soft like a heart stopped in a lobby above one's lungs as well it might, as might it will, seeds taking a shape too soft to be called a burr, like falling asleep on a bench with the sun on your face, seeds in a shape too soft to be called a globe, too breakable to be called a constellation, too tough to not be worth wishing upon, the crowd of birds, an unheard murmuration, plural noun, not led by one bird, but a cloud folly of seeds, blasted by one of countless breaths, escaping from blasted, wished upon clock as breath, providing a clockwork with no regard to time nor hands, flocking with no purpose other than the clotting and thrilling and thrumming, a flock as a gathered ellipsis rather than lines of wing and bone and beak, falling asleep grey-headed rather than young and dazzling, more puff than flower, collecting the ellipses of empty speech bubbles, the words never said or sayable, former pauses in speech as busy as leaderless birds, twisting, blown apart softly to warm and color even the widest of skies.
Thank you for that beautiful piece.
Oh, thank you.
What is your history with Penguin Random House Books, and how did you become PRH author?
Well, my collection of short fiction came out in the UK with Influx Press, which is a small independent press. And I hadn't an agent at the time. I was very lucky in that the editors at Influx heard me read it at an open mic night, and they swung into action and very kindly made me the offer of publication. And after that got some traction and was reviewed generously here, I gained an agent and they sent the idea for a manuscript to Jason Arthur, who was based at William Heinemann, which is now part of the Penguin Random House family, I suppose. He liked the idea of it, so he made a blind offer on it. So being in the very lucky and privileged position of then almost having to fulfill the proposal that had been kind of out there in quite a miasmatic way, I then had a deadline and set to work. But Penguin Random House has been very, very generous with their time and with the amazing editing that they've offered and that I very much took them up on. So it's been a wild ride with them, and I feel very, very lucky to be part of their mechanisms.
How do you plan to celebrate this release?
It's been a muted in terms of what's possible. I'm lucky enough to be able to talk to people over the airwaves such as this, and I suppose as with everyone else, Zoom and various other online events have been going on. But I, as of today, or when we're recording this, it's the first day that we're allowed into shops in London. So I may well saunter down the high street in Crouch End where I'm based at the moment and look in our Waterstones, which is the local bookshop, and maybe see the thing in the flesh. That's how I'll celebrate, I think.
If our listeners want to buy your book, where should they go?
I recommend all good and bad local bookshops. I've very much been making the most of bookshop.org, I think it is, the way in which independent bookshops, you can make orders there. And I recommend all the independent and otherwise bookshops of Montreal. I had a little look around on Google Maps earlier, and it looks like you're replete with wonderful looking bookshops. So I recommend orders from all of them.
Well, thank you for your interview today.
Thank you so much, and I hope you have a lovely day.
You have been listening to Ellie Williams speaking about The Liar's Dictionary, her latest work. I am your host, Sheila Ferrando.
Did you get vaccinated?
Not yet, but I will soon.
And which one are you getting?
I'm getting the dance vaccine.
The dance vaccine? Great idea.
Yeah, rehearsing with the girls is what I miss the most.
Well, it's going to be the soccer vaccine for me. I can't wait to see the gang again.
Each vaccination brings us closer to these moments. Follow the vaccination sequence planned for your area and book an appointment at quebec.ca/COVID vaccine. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
Feeling off? Need to stimulate your imagination? From May 28th to June 6th, join the 15th edition of the Off TA, a key festival for young creation in live art. By phone or online, dozens of shows, micro-performances, and live broadcast activities are offered to you from all over the city. Come celebrate and support bold artists who create in these uncertain times. Get your accessible or supporter passes now to access the entire program. To learn more about this edition, visit offta.com.
Winnipeg, Manitoba's Female Country Artist of the Year, Leanne Pearson, wrote her latest track, Miles Away, during a period of 4 months where she was forced to be away from her then fiancé, Jordan, due to pandemic travel restrictions. With us today, we have Leanne Pearson. Hi, Leanne, and welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you for having me.
First, please introduce yourself and tell us how you came to be involved in country music.
Well, I am Leanne Pearson. I'm from Winnipeg, Manitoba, and music was always a big part of my life. I started singing when I was 4, and my parents knew I had a natural talent for it, so they put me in musical theater, where I learned to love being on stage at a very young age. I often use my living room as a place to perform and annoy my siblings. So I got to love music very early on. And then I fell in love with cowboy boots. And it just kind of fell in place that country music was my home. And it was where I was kind of destined to be. And naturally, when I write music, it is country music. So I have a big love for country music and all genres to begin with. I'm just a big music lover.
Your latest release is called Miles Away. What is the story behind this song?
Yeah, so this song I wrote during quarantine. I was in Winnipeg, Manitoba, and my fiance was in Nashville, Tennessee. And so we were separated for about, over 4 months. And it was tough for us because we were supposed to be getting married and we had to postpone our wedding festivities many, many times during that 4 month period while being apart from each other. So when we were finally reunited, we decided to just elope and we went to an Elvis chapel with our cat as the cat of honor. And we live streamed the whole event for our family and friends. And it turned out to be a really, really fun time. So looped into this song story is my husband's and my love story as well. Our love story is very interesting. We were on the HGTV show Property Brothers a couple of years ago, and our home was renovated by the Property Brothers. So we kind of have this cool love story where I forced him to be in front of the camera. And so not only is he behind the camera helping make music videos like these Miles Away music videos and helping inspire songs, but I'm forcing him to be in front of the camera as well. So Miles Away is really just a song about our love story.
Maybe listen to some of your music.
I would love that.
This is Miles Away on the Wednesday Morning After.
They say distance makes the heart grow fonder, but I have to wonder. Whoever said that has never been gone so long away from you. It's been months, but it feels like years. You're there and I'm here. I love you more each day, even though me feel safe. I'm so sorry that I had to go away. Leaving you behind was the hardest thing, but I'll be back soon. It's been months, but it feels like years. You're there and I'm here. I love you more each day, even though you're miles away, and I can't wait to marry you one day when you're not miles away, miles away, yeah. Distance does change a thing. Your last name will have a nice ring. I love you more each day, even though you're miles away, and I can't wait to marry you one day when you're not mine. Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about your album, Pull It Off. What was the process you went through producing this album?
Pull It Off was my first ever full-length album. And so there's 11 tracks on the song, on the album, plus one bonus track, making it 12. But I really wanted it to be 11 because 11 is my lucky number. And I have 11-11 tattooed on my forearm. So, but I couldn't narrow it down to just 11. So I threw on a bonus track, which ended up being a single of mine as well. So I got to work with some really, really cool songwriters and producers on this album. One of the producers was Danik DePell, who is from Emerson Drive. And some of the songwriters I got to work with was Greg Lawson, who wrote Love Don't Cost a Thing by Jennifer Lopez, and Phil Barton, who wrote A Woman Like You by Lee Bryce. Of course, Jason McCoy, anybody in the country world will know who he is from the Roadhammers. And very fortunate to have some really, really cool people in my corner to help make something like this happen. And I did all the graphic design myself and co-produced some of the songs on the album as well. So it's really fun to work with people who respect me as an artist and let me be as creative and be as involved in the process as I was. I'm really proud of it, and I'm very, very happy to have finally put out a full-length album where I get to share 11/12 songs with the world.
For your song off that album called Hot Pursuit, you produced a fun video. Tell us about the video.
Yeah, the video is very fun. I love making music videos. It's one of my favorite things to do. And I work with a really, really great fellow in Nashville who allows me to co-produce and co-edit all of these music videos. So when we put our heads together, we come up with some really cool ideas. And this music video won Music Video of the Year at the Manitoba Country Music Awards in 2019, which was a great, great honor because we really had fun making it. So the video is a Bonnie and Clyde styled video where we rob banks, not actually rob banks. I've never robbed a bank in my life, but I still felt like I was doing something illegal pretending to rob it. And we were holding guns and we were driving the exact car or the exact replica of the car from Smokey and the Bandit. So it was really, really cool to have all these moving parts in the video and get to put our heads together and come up with something really neat. And at the very end of the video, there's a twist that you need to watch the video to check out.
Maybe listen to some more of your music?
Yes, please.
This is Hot Pursuit on CKUT.
Don't get me wrong, I think you're great. For someone else, just not for me. There's no way to make this easy. So I'm just gonna come on out and say it. Hanging off the heels on my cowboy boots. Boy, you gotta give up the hot pursuit. If you can't read the signs, let me tell you the truth.
Can't read the signs, let me tell you the truth. I ain't into.
plans musically for the next year?
Well, right now, you would be the first that I've told yet. I am working on a new single with a new music video. I can't say who I wrote it with or what the story is or anything just yet, but I'm very excited for it. It's going to be a really, really fun track, and that will be coming out soon. But, you know, since the pandemic hit, I really leaned into songwriting, as I know most artists and songwriters have. And I've been writing for other artists and writing for myself, and it's a very freeing experience where you just get to focus on songwriting the best song possible rather than writing for a specific project. And I found that kind of freeing where I wasn't focusing anymore on what I needed as an artist. I was just writing to write. And I found some really cool songs through that process, including this next song that you will hear very soon.
If our listeners want some free listening time or to buy your music, where should they go?
If you go to my website, which is leannepearson.ca, right there on the homepage, there will be links to music videos, to my social media. You can find my songs on all the streaming platforms. And the best way to listen for free, I would say, is YouTube. So you not only get to hear my music, but you get that visual experience of watching all these cool music videos that I've worked on throughout the years. So I would suggest going to leannepearson.ca. We can become friends on social media. I love having friends. If you've heard this interview, please send me a message. Tell me that you heard it. I love chatting with new people. And I hope you enjoy what you hear and what you see.
Well, thank you for your interview today.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Leann Pearson speaking about her music. I am your host, Sheila Ferrando.
You're listening to Radio CKUT 90.3 FM Montreal or online at ckut.ca.
Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the Quarantine Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The death toll in Gaza has reached 213 as Israel continues to attack the besieged territory by air, land, and sea using U.S.-made warplanes and U.S.-made bombs. Health officials in Gaza say the dead include 61 children and 36 women. Over 1,400 Palestinians have been injured. Another 58,000 are internally displaced and facing shortages of food, medicine, and supplies. On Sunday, 6-year-old Susie Eshkuntana was pulled from the rubble of her Gaza City home after an airstrike killed her mother and all four of her siblings. Her father, Riyad, was the only other member of her family to survive.
I ran to check up on the girls. My wife jumped. She hugged the girls and took them out of the room. Then a second airstrike hit the room. I could feel the ceilings were destroyed and I was left under the rubble. The last moment I saw my wife, I saw that she threw herself on the floor and the concrete fell on her head.
An Israeli airstrike Monday damaged the office of Qatar's Red Crescent. Another strike